Blog Talk Radio.
To fill my eyes in company with poetry. Well, I'm hoping my voice will hold out tonight. I don't know. I've had my moments today. And I want to welcome Pam. Thank you for calling in tonight, Pam, to hang out with us.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
Yep. I'm not sure what's up with Rex. Hopefully he's still feeling, well, he's feeling all right.
I hope
last
so too.
I heard he was.
You know.
Yeah. No, you never know.
Hopefully
you'll
hear from him soon.
Absolutely. And if not, I hope he's feeling okay and he gets some rest. That's the way I look at it.
Definitely.
I can't shake my head at anybody missing time this week or last week or the week before. You know, I've been on a long hiatus for whatever reason. God decided I needed a little bit of, I don't know what.
Right?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
It is good to hear you. You're sounding slightly better, so it seems to be going in the right direction. And I do hope that Rex isn't sick, but if he is, he definitely will need his rest.
That's right. Chicken soup.
No.
Chicken soup. Lots
That's
of chicken
right.
soup. Don't mind me. I'm just not well, but, you know, I'm crazier as they go along, you know, every day. But, I mean, I've been, like, MIA all but a couple of Fridays since, well, right before Christmas, before the radio went down. And I've only made Fridays ever since because it's just taking a starch out of me. So hopefully I'll feel better soon. You know, better and over it is what I should say. I do feel better.
Oh, absolutely.
I just don't feel quite myself yet. So, So, anyway, I hope you're doing well, and I hope everyone's doing okay. It's good to hear everyone's hanging in there with the shows and doing a fine job as always. I can't say anything bad about any of you. And, they've been good shows lately. Lots of good poetry. I really appreciate that very much. So, listen, Pam, we have a caller. I'm not 100% positive, but I think this might be Zach. Hello, 703. Who is calling, please?
Zach.
I was right.
Hey, Zach.
It's magic.
Hey.
Welcome aboard.
Glad to have you join us.
Thank you.
Very good. Very good. Yes, it's always great to have some good voices calling in and talking and reading and commenting on the poetry. It's always great. And hello, Puddles. I see you in the room waving. Nobody else is waving, so I'll wave. It's all good.
Yeah.
I'm a little crazy. Yeah. So it's all good. But it's good to have folks. I've been seeing a lot of different names rolling through the room, which is always an excitement for all of us. It's good to have new voices and new thoughts, and I always love that. I've seen a lot of new names, either offering just poetry or, I shouldn't say just poetry, offering poetry or calling in. I mean, it's a little bit of everything. Hello, Robbie. How are you? Look, he's waving back. That's pretty good.
We're doing the wave.
That's right. We're doing the wave. There you go, Pam. You got this. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So there we go, like that. If I'd known you were going up, I'd go, right? Oh, my gosh. Oh. Yeah, so, but it is good to have everybody here, and hopefully I will be able to read without losing my voice tonight. I just need to keep my mouth shut, I think. That would be a helpful thing to do, but I can't do it. It's hard. But I'll tell you what we're going to do. Since we don't have Rex with us, Pam, I'm going to get you to start us off. And this is called Care by Jessica C. Wheeler. So let me put this one up. And then we go, yep. Whenever you're ready, hon.
All right. Care by Jessica C. Wheeler. You draw conversations from attention center, commanding the room. Wrapped in a thin shroud of soft cashmere, I rest in the hammock of your palm, swaying, suspended over a steep canyon, in comfort on edge, at the mercy of your grip, clenching, releasing at whim, shivering in the hush of muted whispers, my eyes unwittingly drawn to the bite of your cold air bent. Here at this table, chained to your sentence ellipses on the precipice of expectancy, dangling by a thread of missing words. In the gravity of your shadow company, I give to the anchoring command, hung up on the presence of in a vacant chair. End poem.
Nice read, Pam. Really nice job. And Pam, do you want to run comments?
Sure, I can do that.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
So let's start with your thoughts on this poem, Zach.
Sure. I especially liked, I think, how the speaker orients themselves in the poem, drawing the attention from the center and then outward, and then like the rocking back and forth. You can kind of feel it. And you can also feel the outdoor, being outdoors, the heat and the cold, and the senses are way more involved. And I really enjoyed that. It's very comforting.
Absolutely.
It does have. I can see that. Yeah. This is one of those poems. I read it earlier, and, of course, reading it again now, I feel like you can get multiple meanings from it. Like the first time, and I really liked her extended metaphor, especially to do with the chair. But the first time I read it, I thought, there's kind of the idea to me anyway, somebody who charms the room while emotionally manipulating with their refusal to talk to you. I saw that especially in the first couple of stanzas. And then I thought, you know, and some of this really offers up almost a sensuality to it. And then the end lines with hung up on the presence in a vacant chair makes me think that the person was actually not even there. Like maybe it was simply the memories of them that were in the room. Either way, no matter what it means, it's definitely a powerful and emotionally charged rite and truly beautifully written. And I always like and enjoy and appreciate Jessica's writing. And, Dean, your thoughts?
You know, I thought there were many great lines in this poem. You know, I love the imagery, and I thought they were nicely penned metaphor. These lines here started at the beginning. I could have picked any one of these clusters and been satisfied. But you draw conversations from attention's center, commanding the room. Wrapped in a thin shroud of soft cashmere, I rest in the hammock of your palm, swaying suspended over a steep canyon. Is someone lulling you into that sense of safety or I'm trying to think of another word that I want here. My brain is not catching up with me. But it is. Someone lulls you into that sense of security, that sense of being comfortable in their presence and what have you. And I think that that's what I get from just the first two stanzas. And I think that there's so much going on. And it's so well written. Jessica has a wonderful way of writing. She uses what I like to call a softer words. It has nothing to do with their harder or soft vowel sounds. Softer as in a softer sentence structure, something that draws your attention but isn't like, it doesn't demand your attention. It draws your attention, and I like that kind of writing. So great job, Jessica, and thank you so much for sharing with us, and a great piece.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know what you mean. There's almost a feminine energy to her writing and her sentence structure. You know, it's always intriguing to me how poets can read the same two or three stanzas or the same poem and get something different about it from it.
Absolutely.
And yeah, wonderful observation.
Yeah, it is funny because, you know, as I always say, the beauty of poetry is, you know, everyone interprets it differently. And we kind of look at that and we kind of see something we relate to in one way or another, I think. And that's just kind of the way I saw that, and I thought it was pretty interesting. But the whole piece is great, so I have to say that. Okay, I guess I need to find another poem now and shut up. That's what I need to do.
Yeah, probably.
Wow. Okay, Pam, just say what you mean. God, everybody get that one? Wow, she's rough. This girl is rough. Zach, how about I put your piece up next?
Okay.
Okay, this piece is called The Body by Harmo Neurotic. Okay, here we go. It is hitting the board now.
All right.
I lied. Let me do it again.
I woke to silence. No noise of her readiness, not ready for the doctors. She had to be rousted. I did not know her body, no longer granted life. Lungs failed to grasp air. Oxygen slowly released. Her flame died out in the night. I descended the second floor stairwell, turned the white drywall corner, unaware hell waiting, chaos hiding in daylight. The usual disarray of trash, used medical garbage, piled on the coffee table, diabetic syringes and wrappers, collections of inhalers orbiting the couch. The sight stuck. I broke. I stared at the still bundle. No rise or fall. No movement. Tousled brown head framed a moon face, the color of light gray ash, resting on a cushion. A gray blanket covered her prostrate horizontal person. Marbled right hand lolled at me. I grasped the hand, recoiled from the cold. A shock of chill filled ocean flooding in a teacup. My stomach bottom past my intestines. Abdomen piled below a bed of snaking tubes. Empty below my pelvis, whiplashing electricity. She held the illusion of sleep. Her body had difficulty convincing me of death. Stubbornness could not buy because death is forever. I lifted her eyelids. Her cloudy gray-green eyes did not stir in their sockets, holding a cast of sadness, devoid of telltale light pricks. I wanted to claw at the cold, retrieve any remaining warmth. I tried to grasp the scene. The picture I tried to frame threatened to shatter my portrait. Contained by flimsy corners, I failed to break at once, but the pane of glass cracked and my temperature rose and the hot living room crept. While she grew colder, my strength thinned like transparent rice paper. I called police. Sitting across the floor, cabinets back behind me, the body laid on the couch, looming, solemn sepulcher, stretching above my head, altar awaiting funeral pyre. My voice cracked in vain hope, preparing for professional verdict. An ambulance arrived. Paramedics tried CPR, defibrillation. I sat in the ambulance, silent, jaw dropped, quivering. A cavity cave, set of caverns, opened up with dynamite, collapsing thought and nerve. The crater grew deeper. After talking with the coroner, mom declared dead, rigor mortis, zipped in a yellow body bag. Exit stage left paramedics, hustling to the morgue. Now, I'm alone, door shut, instant, shrieking hysteria, blurred in a savage whirl, an emotional storm brewed, spreading, spiking sonar, seeking my decapitation, amplified air horn sounding, shrieking feedback loops, tossing napalm torrents, sliding inside my stomach. Writhing nests of exposed nerves. I shrieked and I screamed on the verge of dying, and I wanted to die. Dials remained at full volume the entire week after. My face a red primal mask. I still cry and scream. Inside, ongoing bombs drop. Guts rearrange every week. Stirred by skyscrapers, this living room fell apart. Her show is no longer echo, as does her omnipresent voice. Her trash no longer exists. I gaze at the roomscape. The replacement couch sits beneath two bay windows, pale light streaming forth. I memorialize her final moments. Her ghost remains with me, the after image of her body superimposed sideways. I freeze still and remember. End poem.
Great read and write, Zach. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I want to thank you so much for sharing this with us.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. And Jean, your thoughts.
Well, first off, I want to say I'm sorry for your loss, Zach. It's never easy. You know, loss is never easy. And to have someone die at home is like a double-edged sword, because most people don't want to be anywhere else when they go because they have a comfort in their home. But it's kind of rough on the family. My mom died here at home. We took care of her here. And when the time came, we were kind of prepared. I worked in long-term care all my life. So it was kind of a different view on things in a respect. And we knew it was coming. But when you're not expecting, even though I don't think you ever really expect it, it's always like one of those things that it just kind of takes over. It takes you over at some point or another. Because it's like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. And you're trying to figure out what exactly you're supposed to do. You know, because they don't write a book on this thing. Yeah, you know, it's kind of like when you have kids.
Oh, right, answer.
They don't come with a manual, and neither does the opposite end of life. But I think that you captured all the details well in this poem, and I hope it was cathartic for you to write it. You know, I hope that it somehow lets you get some of that grief out of your system and express it in a different way. And it's just, you know, it's hard because, you know, from what I see here is your mom had issues with her breathing and her diabetes and what have you. And it was a lot for her. And, you know, I mean, all you can do is say, you know, hopefully she was asleep and she went peacefully. And that doesn't make the other side of the coin any easier. But sometimes it's you can't help but feel that they've gotten relief, depending on what. But it was a wonderful write, and it was well expressed. And, you can hear the pain in your voice when you read it. which is good, because you really shouldn't lose that when you read this piece, because this is a hard time to go through. And I think you did a fine job. And thank you so much for bringing it and sharing it tonight with us. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. Wonderful comment, Jean. And I, too, am, and like I said, I still am truly sorry for your loss. I lost my mother, too, a few years back. Wasn't in the same house as her, but it's still a difficult loss. And especially as you get, like, you go through holidays or you go through, near the anniversary of their death, it's always a difficult thing. I will say that on a poetic level, what I liked about this poem is its attention to detail. It's so visceral and so emotive, and, you really don't hold back. And I think that's important, because I think people who are grieving, especially young men who are grieving, I think society has gotten better, but, oftentimes society has an expectation of how young men are supposed to act when they're grieving. And, they should be able to shriek, and they should be able to scream, and they should be able to cry and, feel as if their world is falling apart. Your lines are powerful. Like I said, you have these amazing attention to detail. And like Phil said, I'm truly sorry for your loss. I hope that, writing this has been cathartic for you, even though we all know that it's not going to completely take away the pain and the grief, but it's going to be part of the process. So, amazing right. I'm very thankful you trusted us enough to share it with us. Was there anything that you wanted to say about your right, Zach?
Well, just thanks for letting me read it. I had to get it out. I felt the need to. And her anniversary is coming up, and I'm starting to feel certain ways, and writing certain things, and rereading certain poems, and, thinking.
Yes.
And remembering.
Absolutely.
I get that. I think that's what many of us go through when we lose somebody. So, absolutely. Thank you. And, all right, Jean, we are going back to you now.
Okay. Let me see now. I'm going to try and find, there it is. I've had to find the room. And I'm going to try and read this next one by, well, I think Naomi's calling in. Naomi, are you calling in? I'm only kidding, because I haven't seen her in a while. Just trying to be nice.
I saw her earlier, an hour or so before the show, but goodness only knows.
Right. Oh, God, I would read this. Well, I'll try and read this one. If this doesn't go good, we'll have a change for the rest of the show.
Oh, she says yes, she is calling in.
Okay, well, I'm going to skip your piece for now. I'm going to skip over yours. I'm going to try and read this one. Hopefully my voice will hold out, because, of course, it's not a short one. Why would it be? Oh, my God, here we go. This is called The Void in the Basement by Darkened Auras. So, an obsidian void opened in my basement floor with an echoing hum. Is this some kind of door? I placed a camera to capture any movement, to see if something comes out, to see where it went. The very next night, while watching the live feed, something emerged, some demonic breed. Black as the night, with crimson eyes, enormous teeth, and hellish cries. It looked straight at the camera with a piercing glare, and all I could do was silently stare. My pulse was racing, though my heart felt stopped. It raced up the stairs, and my stomach dropped. I heard the breaking of doors, and I was gasping for breath. Was tonight going to mark the night of my death? How could I escape something so fast? I covered my mouth as its shadow crept past. I was hiding in the closet, praying this was all just a dream. Then the closet burst open, and I let out a scream. It was my boyfriend, just home from work. I punched his shoulder and called him a jerk. He apologized for scaring me and asked why I was hiding. I pulled him to the basement to show him what was residing. But the void was now gone. No tracer was there. My hair stood on end, and there was a chill in the air. As my boyfriend slept, I remembered the tape. Watched back through the footage as a whimper escaped. The beast had gone back down just before I was saved. Closed the void and got weird in a way it behaved. Snapping bones, twisting limbs, writhing in pain. Watching it, I felt like I was going insane. The thing that terrified me to my core was the last few moments I couldn't ignore. My heart started pounding at the very end when I saw that thing morph into my boyfriend. And poem. Well, great piece. And poem.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was
great. Great read, baby. I tell you, Dark and Doros has such a gift for dark storytelling. I love the twist at the end, and the way she does this in a, like, you know, if you're a fan of, like, psychological horror and sci-fi horror, I think this, you know, is right up that alley. An excellent creepy tale with a great twist at the end where the secret is revealed. And, you know, there's even this, like, whole idea, like, you know, like, she almost sets up with the idea of the boyfriend coming home from work. I punched his shoulder and called him a jerk. He apologized for scaring me and asked why I was hiding. I pulled him to the basement to show him what was residing. I mean, those are some great lines. And though it doesn't really directly reveal anything, it kind of sets up the tone for the ending. Amazing dark storytelling and very well done. And Zach, your thoughts on this?
Lovely narrative flow starting off. Just easy to follow because of the rhyme and reminding me of a found footage horror film, specifically like a Lovecraftian type, kind of like Hell House, like with the camera footage.
Yep.
And hiding in the closet, like a Michael Myers type of thing. And then the boyfriend comes in, and it's really not the boyfriend in disguise. And then the twist at the end was very, very well done, and it made it for a great tale.
Absolutely.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, I like what you had to say, the comparison to a kind of a Lovecraftian style horror. So very cool there. And, Gene, your thoughts?
Well, you know, I really like this. You know, we all know I like my little rhymers always. I think that they're wonderful because the flow makes it so simple to read. And if you do them well, you don't lose anything because of the rhyme. And I think that's the trick to rhyming poetry. I thought it was an excellent dark tale. I loved the rhyme and meter, and I thought it was a great story told. And when I grabbed up the lines, I grabbed up the last two stanzas, of course, because that's where everything turns and becomes just a bit different. You know, you think she's telling her boyfriend this story and she's going to show him this tape. And all of a sudden you realize that she's actually telling the story to the one she was running from. So I thought that was pretty cool, and I liked the way she did that. You know, we all know I like a little twist at the end, too, so this definitely constitutes that. So just a wonderful job, Christina, and thank you so much for sharing with us, as always. Really enjoyed it. And nice job. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Do we have any callers?
We do. I think Naomi's here. Did you comment on that poem, Pam?
I did, yes.
God, see, I'm so confused. Miss Naomi, is that you?
Hello. Yes, it's me.
Hi. Welcome.
I was waiting. I said,
welcome to the party.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to be here. I was waiting for my computer to charge up because I was on my phone, but my computer, you know, I read on my computer and I do stuff on my computer while I'm on my phone. So, yeah, waiting for it to charge.
Absolutely.
So, her voice, oh my gracious, it's getting back, but it's
I'm telling you, this has been a struggle.
Yeah. Boy.
Well, I don't know. I got medicine yesterday. I went to the doctor's yesterday. They gave me medicine. I've taken it the way I'm supposed to. And if I'm not better by Monday, I'm supposed to call and get a chest x-ray. But it doesn't feel like it's in my chest. It's definitely my upper respiratory area. It's like just from my... Yeah, it's like from my collarbone up.
Like your throat, yeah?
Yeah, a little bit. My throat doesn't hurt. It just decides when it wants to work and when it doesn't want to work. You know, it's the way that happens. I don't know.
Wow.
It's during my life.
Oh.
It's been 2 weeks. I've had enough.
Yeah, my goodness.
Yeah.
One has time for that.
Yeah, I think so. I don't want to be hanging out with this thing for that long.
Mm-mm.
Good heavens.
Mm-mm.
You know.
Yeah.
But yeah. So I sound like some crazy old woman. Absolutely. Hey, Naomi, did you happen to hear the poem by Darkened Ours?
Yeah, well, I was, I heard bits and pieces of it, and, you know, it's so well written. My gracious, it's so captivating, and the way she just wrote it, you know, it was really well written. It captivated, it kept the reader there, you know, it was in simple language, and it just, you know, just like a dark story would be told, and I love the way it was. My boyfriend just came home from work. I punched his shoulder and called him a jerk. You know, that's something you would really do in real life, you know. So it made it all that real, you know, that authentic. So, yeah, you know, it was a story, but at the same time, she made it feel so authentic that it was, like, real, you know, and that was even, made it even better. So great.
Great job. Great comment, Emily. Okay, let's see, where am I going to go next? Pam. Oof, sorry. I'm not really meaning to, like, go ouch when I say your name. But I had to do it that time. I'm going to put up a piece by Rooster Cogburn, if you would be so kind as to read it for me. And hello.
All right. Should I put on my deep voice with my Irish accent?
Maybe. I'm not exactly sure how this poem is going to go. You might need to bounce back and forth between your deep Irish accent and your soft Irish accent. I'm not 100% on that. So let's see what you can do with this.
All right. Well, this is The Courting of Cruella by Rooster Cogburn. Perchance to meet an angel so sweet within a floral display of meadow field, little could I do but admire the view and hope her heart was mine to steal. A smile engaging, my pheromones raging, pray tell, how can I impress you so? In graveled voice, her reply quite choice, good sir, poetry recital by handsome beau. And being a wordsmith of noted repute, I quoted Shakespeare so loud and clear, metaphor, simile mixed in rhyme astute, and with each verse a garment dispersed. With final poetic poesy, she in pantyhosey then spoke to tell her name, I am Cruella, removing underwear, bemused by my there, but naked out afore me, my darling was a fella. And
oh my god.
Oh, that was
great.
Yeah, that's great. Oh, my gosh. And, Zach, I heard you get a chuckle out of that. So your thoughts.
Oh, man. I love the setup. You can see the setup of the dancing in the meadow and the figures sort of just there. And, of course, you just want to go over there and see what's going on, you know, and you just kind of wander on and try your very best to kind of shoot your shot. And before you know it, it just kind of takes him aback a bit. Very surprising. And it was a very funny ending, obviously, very funny.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great comment. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Oh, so Rooster. My gracious. It's so him. You know, we've read other poems from him that are just as funny. And, you know, this is no exception. Oh, my gracious. I just love, you know, a smile engaging, my pheromones raging. Pray tell, how can I impress you? And graveled voice. Well, that should have been a hint there. Her reply. Good sir, poetry recital, my handsome beau.
I resemble that remark about that crispy voice there. That's what that's my name. That definitely suits me this week.
so true. So sorry. But but this is really good. You know, and being a wordsmith of noted repute, I quoted quite Shakespeare so low and so clear. You know, he really gave himself, you know. And then for that ending, oh my gracious, when that ending came, it was just so funny. So well done, Rooster. Good job.
Absolutely. Great comment, Naomi. And your thoughts, team?
I don't know. I'm starting to wonder about this. I don't know, Naomi. You and I are going to talk after this. Oh, my God. That was funny. And so when she said I'm about a gravelly voice, and I started laughing, I'm like, wait a minute now. I resemble that remark. I thought this was pretty funny by Rooster. Wonderful humorous write and a great prompt. I assume the picture was the prompt. And if not, well, it was a great find to go with it, you know. But I wanted to thank him for the share. And I had to go to that final stanza with final poetic posy. She in pantyhose. Then spoke to tell her name, I am Cruella, removing underwear, bemused my stare, but naked afore me, my darling was a fella. You know, only Rooster. You know, Rooster has always been quite humorous in his work. And he's a good poet. I think this was fun. You know, so nice job. And hey, I love the Kinks. I just got to say. So there you go. Nice job, Rooster, and thanks
for
sharing.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, this was great. A wonderful comment, Gene. And I like this all the way through, but that last stanza was particularly clever. This really cracked me up. I told him it was great humor and an excellent write on the beans and sausage surprise that wasn't ordered. I loved his response, which was
great.
Oh, he says, I'm normally partial to beans and sausage, but I'll skip on those kind of offer. This was funny all the way through. But I did like where, besides the last stand, I also really liked the confidence that comes through in this poet. And being a wordsmith of noted repute, I quote Shakespeare so loud, so clear, metaphor, simile, mixed in rhyme, astute, and with each verse, a garment dispersed. And the use of the word pantyhose, like very few people can get away with putting a word in that's not actually a word just to keep the rhyme. Like, you know, Dr. Seuss is one of them. Dr. Seuss would make up words. You know, Rooster apparently is one of those too. You know, he can, with final poetic poesy, she in panty hosey. And it just works so very well. So excellent writing, very well done. And we are going back to you now, Jean.
Okay, I'll tell you what. Next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to put up a piece by Stellina called Take Ye Partners. And I have an audio for this. So let me hit the button. Let's see if I can find the button. There it is.
Let me fiddle you a song from the old country to get your feet to tapping, to worm the cockles of your heart while at the window Jack Frost's a-rapping. The rhythmic beat of the barren will set your limbs on fire. It'll fill your heart with Yuletide cheer, raising your spirits higher. There's nothing quite like a rose in Irish air to chase away the wintry blues, to worm the blood and flush your cheeks and breathe life into your dancing shoes. So take your partners for a twirl neath the verdant Christmas fair, with twinkling lights and candles aglow. Moulin pipes will cause a stir. The sea may rage and the wind blow bleak, but the music makes the eyes shine and chases away the heavy hearts along with a mug of mulled wine. For the beloved old tunes are the best, even children and wee doggers can't resist. The music of our land will live for many a year as precious memories by melodies are kissed.
Great read and write, Stellina. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Naomi, let's start with your thoughts.
Ah, this is so great, Stellina. Oh, my gracious. I thought for a minute there she was going to start, you know, singing, because she does, you know, sing so beautifully too. But, you know, this is just great. She just took us on a trip right to Ireland there. And, you know, we were just dancing along with her words to the song, you know. So well written, the flow just spot on. And, you know, the sea may rage and the wind blow bleak, but the music makes the eyes shine and chases away the heavy hearts along with a mug of mulled wine. It's just amazing the way she composed the whole thing. She took me to Ireland, took me right there. So thank you. Thank you, Stellina. Wonderful, wonderful, right?
She really did, yes. And she is so multi-talented and, you know, diverse in her talents. So really cool comment there. And Zach, your thoughts?
I was transported a bit out of my comfort zone, but in a good way. It was very, very spirited. I liked the rising of the fire. I felt like the rising of the alcohol maybe a little bit too. The nice sensation is very richly layered and vivid and throughout the tavern itself, and very beautifully synced with the music. And I like the sense of like an optimistic kind of Christmas throughout. So I could have used more of that, but yeah, it was great.
Yeah. You're right. It does have a very optimistic Christmas feel vibe to it. So very cool comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
See, I knew you were coming here. I could count to four. Thank God. Listen, I thought this was a fabulous write by Stellina. I loved the rhyme and meter in the piece. And I thought it was quite a fine fine piece. And the feeling authentic in the tale. No, that's not how I wrote that. Quite a fine piece, feeling authentic in the tale itself. Wonderful audio, as always, from her. And I really enjoyed this work. Excellent job, and thanks for the share tonight, Stelina. Appreciate it. Great work.
Absolutely, yes. Wonderful comment. Yeah, I really enjoy this one. The music background, of course, background music was a great choice. I really liked how this was it was a wonderfully spirited and uplifting rite. The rhyme and flow gave it a great lyrical quality and such an excellent rite to me on the music of Ireland that gives the feet and spirit reasons to dance in this festive holiday season. And I really like this all the way through, but a verse that really stood out to me was, "The sea may rage and the wind blow bleak, but the music makes the eyes shine and chases away the heavy hearts along with a mug of mulled wine." Wonderful lines and very well done. All right, Jean, back to you.
Okay, the next piece I'm going to put up, Zach, I'm going to ask you to read. And this is called Purple Fabergé Egg by Eric Svensson. So if you'd be so kind.
Sure. Embrace, decays, falling away. As ripe granada the eyes go. Relinquish, release, timely let go. Hasten, not perfect time. Delay neither as shining granadilla bubbles do. Sheen of ruby, Faberge fruit eggs drop down. Interment release, embrace, decay, falling away, passion flower, progence festooned, emerald green bower, 13th day of the new year, gifts in the morning with purple rain fruit, chase without haste, embrace, decay whittles away, sanctions release of dead wood, summer fruit shares its bounty, clarity, cameo nestles snug as a bug, constant gardener, nurtured, granadilla, arbor, salt, pepper, sweet of harried hot summer days. Now, on the 13th Giannis day, posh purple Faberge eggs reward. And poems.
Nice.
Great
nice
read, Zach. And what a wonderful write by Eric Svensson. And Naomi, your thoughts.
Yeah, I was just reading Janus. Is January named after two-faced Roman gods of beginnings, gates, transitions, time, duality, doorways, passages, frames, and endings? And so, yeah, wonderful, right, on the fruit. And to call them Fabergé eggs, that's really neat. Because the Fabergé egg was, something of great beauty. And, and bravo, Zach. Oh, my gracious, bravo. That was a great read. Eric is not the easiest one to read. He's such a great wordsmith. My gracious, he has wonderful alliteration all through this piece. And wonderful metaphors and imagery, just beautifully done. So that was a great write. Decay whittles away, sanctions release of dead wood, summer fruit shares its bounty. So, just the way the fruit, passes away fruit decays, I guess, or fruit withers away, and a wonderful, wonderful write to that picture, that prompt. So wonderfully done, Eric. Beautiful write.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment, Naomi. And Jean, your thoughts?
So I thought that Eric did a great job with this. And Zach, I have to say, Naomi's absolutely correct. Eric is not the easiest read we have. He is not. He's a wonderful wordsmith, and he has a fabulous vocabulary that kind of throws you off for a second here and there. And normally he gives us a sound clap. So when he didn't, I looked at it. It's not really that long. So I want to thank you for doing such a fine job with it.
Oh, thank you.
I thought it was great imagery and detail throughout. very nicely written. So many well-penned stanzas here. I kind of grabbed Embrace Decays Falling Away, Passion Flower Progenies, Festooned Emerald Green Bower, 13th Day of the New Year, Gifts the Morning with Purple Rain Fruit, Chased Without Haste, Embrace, Decay Whittles Away, Sanctions Release of Dead Wood, Summer Fruit Shares Its Bounty. I think it was a well-written piece by Eric all the way through, and I needed to pick two stanzas. I didn't really need to pick two, but I always do. I always feel like I'm cheating somebody if I don't. But, yeah, I could have picked any two of these and been just as satisfied because everything was really well-written and well-expressed. So excellent job, Eric, and thanks for sharing with us tonight. Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. Great comment, Jean. And you did a wonderful read of that, Zach. Your thoughts?
I noticed how I needed to slow my voice down with this a little bit and enunciate, but in a good way. It kind of just like narrow my focus, and I hope I did well with enough of the foreign tongues. I think especially my favorite is definitely the Purple Rain Fruit, because it just brought Prince immediately to my mind, so I just kind of had made that association and kind of just went with it. It was lovely.
It really is. Absolutely. Wonderful comment. Yeah, I really liked this one, and I did not know I had to learn this today, so I learned something new, that the Granadilla fruit is actually another name for the passion fruit. So I thought that was really cool to learn something new. I like his imagery and metaphors and the picture that he provided with it. And so I thought that, you know, looking at the picture, calling them purple Fabergé eggs was just, you know, spot on. But I like that this can be a literal rite, or it can be a metaphorical rite, you know. And really I like how it speaks on reflecting on transition and the winter of life, and also the idea that you cannot push growth. There was hasten not perfect time, delay neither as shiny granadilla baubles do, sheen of ruby Fabergé fruit eggs drop down, intermittent release. You know, I mean, it's very literal, but also very metaphorical in the idea of knowing that when it is time for something to happen, it will. Amazing write and very well done. And back to you, Jean.
Okay. Well, let me see now. Normally, Puddles, I would go with that, except for I'm trying to get through some of these writes as best I can. Naomi's is only a couple away, because after I read, then I was going to have Pam read, and then Naomi was going to read. So hopefully you can hang in that long. Sorry, Naomi, I hope you're not in a hurry, because I really wasn't thinking like that.
No. I'm okay.
Okay. Well, the next piece I'm going to read, only because Pam seems to think we sound alike. And this piece is called My Body is a Grave by Robert M. Listen to this later. My body is a grave that shields me from feeling love, since there's naught left of me. My body is a grave where no hopes escape, fears multiply, and my doubts come to feast. There's nothing that can save these charred, ragged bones, rattling hollow, encased in my dreams. There's nothing that can save this martyr of one, flaunting his shame as he falls on his blade. End poem.
Great read, Robert. I mean, Jean. yeah, wonderful read there, Jean. And Naomi, let's start with your thoughts. You on mute, Naomi?
I put myself on mute. Oh, boy. I was off mute, and I put myself on mute. My body is a grave that shields me from feeling love, since there's not left of me. You know, my body, he's really, you know, he goes really deep here, really dark. My body is a grave where no hopes escape, fears multiply, and my doubts come to feast. Yeah, wow. You know, he's really, really going deep into, you know, whatever depression or, you know, somebody who just seems to have given up here. This mark of one flaunting his shame as he falls on his blade. You know, falling on your blade, you know, this is like the Japanese, what do they call that? That act there that they do when they commit suicide for the honor of their, when they dishonored their family, they do that.
I don't think that's Harry Carey, though. I think it's something different.
Buku?
Maybe.
What is it?
Yeah, I don't remember the exact term. Like, yeah, Harry Carey comes to mind, but I think that's something different.
I think that's
like,
different.
Similar concept, but different.
Right.
I think that. Anyway, it's, he refers to that, and it works so well, flaunting a shame as he falls on his blade. So, you know, he transports us back to, I guess, Japan or, you know, in those times, and, you know, a person that's so, that shamed his family or so much, or carries so much shame inside of himself. Like, it could be, like, a metaphor, too, or it could be taken literally, too, you know. So, just an amazing write by Robert, as he can do them. So, bravo.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Wonderful comment, Naomi. And, Zach, your thoughts?
I think the first stanza that kind of hit me the most was the paradox of my body is a grave. That shields me, and the shield implies strength, but it's a paradox because it's a decayed skeleton, so what's strong about that? There's nothing left. And then you get this indescribably hopeless sinking sensation, just sliding into that grave, and there's really no hope at all in this one. I mean, it's about as dreary as it gets.
It is, absolutely. Yeah, wonderful observations there. And, Gene, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you knew it was me?
Yeah, apparently.
Oh, man. Still robbed. Well, Robert, I guess I failed miserably. But I'm just kidding. I like this piece very much. Robert has such a wonderful way of writing dark poetry. And this was actually written for one of Rex's contests, right? Wasn't it Peter Gabriel? The actual song is called
It
My
was
Body
a pre-write that it wasn't written for Rex's contest, but it was a pre-write that fit with the topic.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he had written for it before, I think, because it was written to My Body is a Cage by Peter Gabriel. I believe that's what my understanding is. And I know that Robert had done a contest on that song many moons ago. And he did a fine job with it. He really has a way of really touching on all of the darkness he can find. And I found it to be really well done. It's actually very short for something of Robert's, I thought. I usually expect a couple more stanzas than this. But I think he really, in this case, less was more. It really worked. There's nothing that can save these charred, ragged bones, rattling hollow, encased in my dreams. There's nothing that can save this martyr of one, flaunting his shame as he falls on his blade. Nothing can save me because I'm just done, I'm just taking it out right here, and I think that was well said there. Just amazing. Another great piece, Robert, and thanks for sharing with us. As always.
It really is. Absolutely. Wonderful comment, Gene. Yeah, you know, Robert really is. He's such a talented poet, and, you know, he's just got this amazing gift for poetry, especially for rhyming poems. You know, he does have an amazing reading voice, so I'm hoping next time we get a write of his, we'll have a recording, because, you know, it's always great to hear him. But, you know, I remember writing to the same song, and the song My Body is a Cage by Peter Gabriel is just one of those that I could listen to over and over again. And I like how Robert gives it, you know, his inspiration is his own spin to the lyrics of the song, and yet he captures the essence of it. All the way through, I mean, all four stanzas are great, and you're right. In this case, it is the idea of less is more. But what really spoke to me was that second stanza. My body is a grave where no hopes escape. Fears multiply, and my doubts come to feast. You know, my doubts come to feast, I think, is such a relatable line, because I think more than anything else, for many of us, it's the doubts we have inside that truly tear us apart and tear us down. So, amazing, right, and very well done. All right, and what do we have next, Jean?
Okay, Pam, I'm going to have you read this piece by Jody Melton. I don't have any notes saying he's calling, so. And have you read this, and then Naomi will be up next. So thank you whenever you can.
Now, did you tell me to read this?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I was just making sure. All right. Okay. I Fell for the Idea of You by Jody Melton. In the forest of my heart where whispers echo true, I fell hard like hickory getting axed inside the idea of you. Your essence a melody danced through the trees, rustling leaves of longing swaying with ease. You were the dawn breaking over my night, a spectrum of feelings bursting into light, like a tree rooted deep, standing strong, standing tall. I fell for the idea of you. I surrendered my all. Your smile, a beacon in my world of shadow, lit up hidden paths where only love could follow. Your laughter, a river where my thoughts could swim. In the depths of your soul, I found my hymn. In the quiet of the woods where secrets unfold, I felt my heartbeat bold yet cold. For falling like timber in a swift, sudden sway, I was lost in the idea of you day after day. Your words like leaves fluttered down to my core, whispering promises leaving me craving more. Each phrase a carving deep in my bark, leaving a mark that glowed in the dark. But like a tree that fell in the silence of the woods, I lay there wondering if I was ever truly understood, that the idea of you, so vast, so wide, was a journey, not a destination, where my heart could reside. In the hush of the forest, many tales untold, I embraced the idea of you, brave and bold. For in the fall, like hickory, so clear, so true, I found not just the idea, but the essence of you. In the magic of nature, with your love calling, I stumbled, falling. You tried to brush me off, babe. I never dreamed we'd end up this way. The fall, the rise of a heart so perplexed. In the idea of you, I found myself vexed. So here in the timber where dreams did take flight, I cherished the idea of you day and night. For in falling hard, like the hickory axe, but free, we found love's truest form, even though it was not meant to be. End poem. And great. Naomi, thank you. And your thoughts, Naomi?
Yeah, you know, I love when the repetition of, you know, the idea of you, You know, when you fall in love with the idea of a person, yeah, I think you can, you know, fall in love with the idea of a person. But he falls in love with the idea of the person, but I think much more your essence, a melody, you know, then you break the dawn, breaking over my night. He found his, you know, in the depths of your soul, I found my hymn. I was lost in the idea of you day after day. But you know what? In the end, he says, we found love's truest form even though it was not meant to be. So, you know, is this, you know, a love that a missed love? You know, that, you know, it could have been, but it was too much, too late. You know, I was just wondering about that, you know. Or was it a love that came together, although that has to be in the beginning, it wasn't really meant to be that way, but it did form into love. So, you know, you can take it in different ways, I find. But wonderfully, wonderfully well composed. It's, you know, like when you were reading it, Pam, that was a beautiful read, by the way. It was almost like a hymn that you were reciting, you know, like something like spiritual, like a gospel hymn almost. It was so beautiful. You know, the flow of it and the rhythm of it, it's so well put. And, yeah, just a wonderful write by Jody all the way through. Very well done.
It really is. Absolutely. Great comment, Naomi. And Zach, your thoughts?
Well done from the axe sound, reminding of the incoming heartbreak or the ongoing heartbreak, I should say. And, love using nature to personify the depths of sorrow felt with the speaker. And I love the tree imagery flew out. Very nice. Very nice trope. Gave the piece kind of like a figurative consistency. And the founding idea of love in nature, there's something beautiful about that. Looking to nature for answers and ending on a hopeful note, a note of acceptance rather than one of the other stages. So I like that.
Yeah, I can see that. Absolutely. Wonderful comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, you know, what's not to love? Really, this is a wonderful poem. And I like that, you know, it's a longer poem, but it doesn't feel like a longer poem, which I always find to be absolutely wonderful, you know, when you have all these lines and it just, you know, doesn't feel heavy. It doesn't feel like it's weighing you down. But I thought this was just a fabulous piece, beautifully worded and rhymed. I thought the emotions were so well expressed. He really is an excellent poet, I have to say that. Everything I've read of his so far has really kind of left me going, wow, that's really awesome. And I think that's great. But I grabbed up these two stanzas. In the forest of my heart where whispers echo true, I felt hard like hickory getting axed inside the idea of you. Your essence and melody danced through the trees, rustling leaves of longing, swaying with ease. You were the dawn breaking over my night, the spectrum of feelings bursting into light. Like a tree rooted deep, standing strong, standing tall, I fell for the idea of you. I surrendered my all. I just think it's fabulous. I love his thoughts here, and I enjoy the fact that he took it to, as I'm not sure who said, I think Naomi may have, you know, took it over to nature and put this in that form. And I think it was really well reflected. So great job, Jody, and thanks so much for sharing with us. I hope you continue to do so. Really like this.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a beautiful one and wonderful comment, Jean. I have to agree with you. Jody is a very talented poet.
Yeah.
And I love his use of nature imagery as metaphors. I like how this speaks on the idea of discovering the depth of a person and the depth of love only after it is too late. For whatever reason, you know, that love was was not meant to be. This truly had these wonderful heartfelt lines all the way through. Like Naomi said, you know, you can fall in love with the idea of a person and then find out that your idea of the person and what the person actually is can be two different things. And, you know, sometimes the truth is found out a little too late. In this case, it seems like, yeah, within the journey of discovering love, by the time he realized what it was that he was experiencing, they had already gone their separate ways. I really liked this all the way through. But I especially like your words like leaves fluttered down to my core, whispering promises, leaving me craving more. Each phrase a carving deep in my bark, leaving a mark that glowed in the dark. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Absolutely.
And what do you got? Absolutely. And what do you got for us next, Jean?
Well, the next piece I have here is called Luna's Vision by Naomi Sarah. So, Naomi, if you would be so kind as to read this for us, I would much appreciate it.
Okay. Luna's Vision. I have to clear my throat. Okay. I crouch by Luna so that our eyes can meet, tucking a mischievous curl behind her ear and point to a starfish a short ways beyond her tiny foot. See in the water, my love, I say. A smile reaches from her lips to her eyes, and she giggles and squirms with arms as lively as waving seagrass. Oh, a flower fish with petals all pretty, she shrieks wide-eyed. I laugh, it sure is. Grandma, did it grow right there as flowers grow in our garden? I smile, because in a funny way, she's right. It did grow in much the same way. So I say it did. It is a flower of the ocean, but one that can wiggle and move as much as a tickle little Luna. And she lets out a squeal, taking off running, I chasing her down the beach. Suddenly the sky cracks open and rain spills out as if an enormous giant is emptying a humongous bucket, loads of water on us tiny-sized humans. I gather my sweater over my head and start to sprint for shelter, then stop in my tracks, seeing Luna twirling her tongue out and small hands spread wide trying to catch the silvery drops. And with each burst of her bubbling laughter echoing within me, I wonder when was it that I started to only see mud and rain? Even though I stood in brilliant and sunny rays, when did I stop envisioning flower, fish, and buttercups? How could anyone stop imagining such a beautiful thing as a flower that grows in abundant generosity all over the earth? They are as if raindrops became joy, as if they are glistening jewels at the end of a rainbow. And I smile, looking towards Luna, sweet Luna, who is that joy. She who sees flower fish and hears the rain's playful pitter-patters and stops to gather up treasures at each rainbow's end, realizing she is my pot of gold, my very own pretty petal, flower fish. End poem.
Great read, Naomi. And such a wonderful write. And Zach, your thoughts?
I think my favorite part about this piece would be the innocence I felt throughout. Childlike and like transported to the sea immediately, and it was very like a whimsical kind of play until like the darker turn when the storm kind of broke in a kind of severe flood. And I especially liked throughout the imagery. Reminding me of like the best, most vivid pieces of like Finding Nemo and the Little Mermaid. I was just seeing those kinds of colors, and it was very cool.
I like that. Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
you know, there's a wonderful sense of love and innocence in this poem. And, you know, obviously they both come from the writer. And the attributes are of the innocence are given to the child. But they really live within the writer, which I think is great. I love the way it's written, Naomi. I really do. I love how you've... I crouch by Luna so that our eyes can meet, tucking a mischievous curl behind her ear, and point to a starfish a short ways beyond her tiny foot. See in the water, my love, I say. A smile reaches up from her lips to her eyes. I think that that is a beautiful visual that you've created there in that in those few short stanzas. Because it is something very relatable to, I think, almost everyone in the world, you know, to be eye to eye with a child, you know, and move that hair back and kind of, you put us at this point of view that is fabulous to start this poem out. I think that there's a lot of wonderful, excuse me, descriptions running through this. And it's just beautifully written, as I said. You know, it's the innocence of it that really speaks to, I think, the reader. But then when you get down there and say, when did I stop, you know, and then you start saying from the other side, when did I stop seeing things this way, it brings a different perspective to the right. But I can say by reading it that that's not really what happens. It's not a true story. You would have had to understand it in order to write it. So I think it was beautiful, Naomi. I really do. I think you did a great job with this. And it's a lovely write, really, all the way through.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. Great comment, Jean. Yeah, I found this to be so beautiful. And both Zach and Jean are right. The sweetness, the love, the innocence that comes across. I love that you paint a picture of the moment, that you share with us this interaction between you and your granddaughter. And, you know, I like how while it is a personal write about you and your granddaughter's interaction, it really speaks about so many children and, you know, the innocence of their hearts, the way their minds want to learn and explore. Their minds are more open to things that we are not. They're not afraid to ask questions. You know, we become almost too guarded with our question asking as adults because we're afraid of asking that stupid question. We want people to think we know everything when we don't. But children just straight out ask. Because they're so willing to learn, really like this all the way through, but especially Grandma, did it grow right there as flowers grow in our garden? I smile because in a funny way, she's right. It did grow in much the same way. I mean, wonderful lines all the way through. Absolutely a delight to read and very well done.
Thank you. Thank you, Pam.
Absolutely.
Thank you, everybody.
Yeah. Thank you.
And I'm glad you shared it with us. And back to you now, Jean.
Oh, God, I'm supposed to know where to go now, aren't I? Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I know. Okay. Well, Pam, I'm going to do it this way. I'm going to give you... maybe I better look at it first.
Because if it's a short one, you want to save it for yourself?
No. I'm just making sure I'm not giving you anything kind of crazy. Okay, I'm gonna ask you to try and read Frank's piece. Okay, we'll have to send a thank you note to Rex for this opportunity.
Oh, yes.
And this
yes.
is called
well,
Way Away in Crimson Clovers by Lawrence Montana. So whenever you're ready.
All right.
Thank you.
Away, Away in Crimson Clovers by Lorian Montemagner. Sad and blooms of a winter have blossomed and splinter as sinewy leaves by a stump become the low rosette clump. The round stipulus swell near the forsaken stems too drear on the damp and fresh land with the reaper's weary hands. The tilled land bleak and fallow by the stream once too shallow, now full of harbingers of spring, gliding with their soothing wings. A bundle of sticks gathered deftly to warm the new fires swiftly as a harvest kinsfolk gleaned with the bare seed weaned. The crispy branches drooping within the long spikes stooping beneath wary clouds that warn above a gambrel roof of a barn. The mighty winds nearby a lee sow amain on fields that dree, bring the rains unto a hillside, softening the oak trees beside, where gleesome nodes tarry beyond leery crops that parry the murk of a drought easterly, waning straightway westerly. Feel the waft of a fresh breath, sheltering the shade of death, whence winsome guises shed the rout field matter red. Hence where rakish children loaf amongst the fain women, amidst the driblets of flowers, thriving in morning showers. Swains bear lapels drenched in the smell of a lea quenched, away, away in crimson clovers, which sway the hearts of lovers. End poem. Well, you know, I have to say that could have been a lot worse.
Yeah.
So I don't think we need to make Rex's punishment too severe. You know, maybe just, you know, a couple of good lashes.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, but you had a wonderful right. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Well, you know, I have to, you know, take my hat off to Frank for this. Oh, my gracious. You know, I don't know if I could have. You know, it must be fun to do. I've never done it, you know, try and write in that old classical, like, Victorian era time. But you know, with all the vocabulary, the specific vocabulary, and he even put in a glossary for us. So, my gracious, so that's wonderful. But, you know, what a great job he did. And, you know, these short, impactful lines. And you do get, you know, the whisk of you know, the poem and you know, the feeling of it. And that was a great read, by the way, Pam. And, you know, I liked it, you know. Hence were rakish children loaf amongst the fain women, amidst the driblets of flowers, thriving in morning showers. You know, you get this idea of this, like, this kind of this village and, you know, all the, what's going on, the people working and you know, the children playing and the, you know, and everything, all the life that's going on within this, like, probably this Victorian time. So just amazing, right, that took us back in time and wonderfully written by Frank indeed.
Oh, absolutely. Great comment, Naomi. And Zach, your thoughts?
Nice wintry landscape, I guess right before the oncoming spring. Very pretty picture. Drifting around, I felt like I was reading something almost like a Robert Frost or like a Thoreau piece. And there was such a serenity with the scenery, and it was great to see the sights. And especially ending with the kind of the lovers' embrace of the hearts at the end. That ended on a very nice note, and I love that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I have to agree. Wonderful comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, you know, Frank is notorious for having some very well-written pieces with the old languages, or variations on the old languages, let me put it that way. Because I'm not the authority on old languages, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not young, but I'm not quite that old. But I thought this was a wonderful way to play Frank. Great job in both language and tale. The round stipules swell near, the forsaken stems too drear, on the damp and fresh lands with the reaper's weary hands. The tilled land bleak and fallow, by the stream once too shallow, now full of harbingers of springs, gliding in their soothing wings, with their soothing wings. Heck, you didn't read it. But I thought it was very well penned, and I enjoyed it very much. Frank, it's another amazing piece that you've put together here, and I want to thank you for sharing with us. You know, as always, you tend to put out some really interesting pieces. I wish, nothing personal, Pam, but I kind of wish Rex was here to read it. You know,
no, I get it.
Both of them really handle his rights very well, and I think they have the voices. Yeah. They're deeper, and they carry it a little differently. But still, I think you did a fine job with it, Pam. I was just teasing you because I saw that there was a glossary, and I said, oh, God. You know, because sometimes it's kind of like a tongue twister, you know, when you get to Frank's rate. But you did a fine job with it. And Frank, that was a great piece, and thanks for sharing. So that's what I'm going to say.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is a beautiful and intelligent rite with a fine use of classic language. And it does have that Victorian style, but it brought me back even farther. Like, it made me think of the idea of going back to a medieval type of village where everybody works together, everybody does their part. A wonderful rhyme and flow, brilliant imagery. I love the way he paints this vivid picture of the community. And so amazing lines all the way through and very well done.
Absolutely.
And what do you have for us next, Jean?
Well, actually, the next one I'm going to put up is for Zach to read. This is a piece by Ben Hart, and it's called One Will Die Before He Gets There. Yes, there we go. And whenever you're
one
ready.
Will die. Sorry. One will die before he gets there. By Ben Hart. I found in all my years the only true frequency for prayer is poetry. So the loneliest you'll ever find me is when staring at a blank page, wondering if the ocean feels the same about clear skies. Light falls through cracked skies onto another vacuum to kill the gray. And I watched you dance through a rose bush, nude beneath that linen sheet. But it was not the same. Dawn's scars were golden, but yours were warmer. So maybe light is flightless, lifeless, until it meets your skin and remembers that warmth is the music of you, the rebellion of a trembling against such silence that it shook a darkness blue, your ripples singing, I'm alive again, not born anew, just the fighter who held out until the end, until she no longer had the fight in her to keep bleeding by her own hand. That's where she found the strength, the Midas touch, to mend, not to be consumed by the earth, but to grow in the dirt. Something that would not bow when the sun goes down, but sing to the moon, that warmth will return. This I have learned, since my eyes changed color from their blue at birth. Yes, we are the aurora, trapped in bodies of hurt, but that journey is worth it. If you just move, the world will go in circles for you. Just move. My poems are snowmen, monuments to her absence. Because atrophy was her favorite ballet, I fear she will only love me the moment I enter the stage and lets me suffocate without the applause. Or maybe they were only war stories, myths of love and death. Just questions in my head, horizons passing by, to perish in the depths, these dreams you waited for me, and knowing I hardly slept, it was wrong of me to forget how to breathe, or to survive my mistakes, and a promise you never made. But I rest well. I will rest well, knowing even if you do not love me back, these words forever will. You're not too much, even if he needs to be alone, when he's too much of himself to remember. You're in need of feeling whole again, darling. I have exhausted every avenue, but the cruelty of the truth that in all my excess of identity and all of my aching, I fled into my love for you. So, my love, if you feel empty, don't forget what you left with me, what I fed back to you in breadcrumbs of sad poetry. I thought there would come a time you were done being destroyed, and I kept that part warm. When the rest of my body started shutting down, you were the seed that survived, from which another Eden did not awake. And don't worry, I'll pull out my own thorns. All I ask, my dear, is if you could tend to the roses, because all I hear when I near them is how we would never be loved the way we loved. And in that self I felt was a suicide. I saw the face of God, and it was biting at a smile. I could have sworn I'd seen it before in a technicolor snowstorm somewhere on a wall in Chicago. But what are the chances God would be Dutch, let alone a master of anything?
Great read there, Zach. And a wonderful write by Ben, who always has great imagery and metaphors. I like how this speaks to me on mainly the idea of the healing power of poetry, the spiritual power of poetry, and how it becomes so intertwined with the rest of our life. You know, and there's some great lines all the way through. I do really like this. This I have learned since my eyes changed color from their blue at birth. Yes, we are the aura trapped in bodies of hurt, but the journey is worth it. If you just move, the world will go in circles for you. Just move. My poems are snowmen, monuments to her absent, because atrophy was her favorite ballet. I fear she will only love me the moment I enter the stage. Amazing lines throughout on the pain of loss and the poetry used to express that loss, and how it's almost like this cold, temporary feeling that you will eventually melt away in the coming of the summer seasons. Great use of imagery and metaphors, and a very thoughtful write. And Jean, your thoughts. Are you on mute, Jean?
I was, and I can't remember my comment. No, I'm only kidding. I think that, you know, Ben is a wonderful poet. Always. Everything I've seen of his has always been quality work. The way he always seems to write in a vignette. Now, if he doesn't always write in a vignette, I must have missed those pieces. But I thought that this was, each vignette was very well done. But down in the author's notes, he titles each vignette, which always gives you like a little bit of, I don't want to say substance, but it gives you a definition of what was in his head when he composed it. And I think that's pretty clever. I think it was an interesting take on the original prompt, which was, and actually it was a poem quote that I went over and I kind of briefly looked at. But I think that he did a fine job, and there's a lot in it. It's never, his work is never anything trite. There's always a lot of fodder and food for thought. And I always find that to be wonderful. But again, you know, I can only ever seem to like look at one part of it and kind of mull it around in my head during the read, because there's so much going on. And each vignette is worth its own, you know, kind of comment at this point. So, but it was an excellent piece, and I want to thank you for sharing with us, Ben. A great job, and it's always nice to have you share. So thank you very much, as always.
Oh, absolutely. absolutely. Great comment, Jean. And Zach, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Very languid, sort of flowing style, and there's such a volume to the piece. I love the pace, especially. And the longer piece it was, but it did not feel long to read. It just kind of felt natural. I loved it.
Nice.
Yeah, I can see that. Wonderful comment. All right, and what do you got for us next, Jean?
I don't know.
That's a good question.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. That's a very good question. I know what I have next. I'm going to put this piece up by Scott Sharp. And then, Pam, I think we're going to have you read one of yours. And then we're going to do Olivier. See? I do have a plan. Whether I retain
all right,
it.
And that sounds like a good plan to me.
Yeah. So this is called I Shall Not Return Here Again by S. Sharp. And I have an audio for this. So let me go and find him. Here we go.
I shall not return here again. I remember riding the Sunday school bus that morning. We sat talking in the back of that old converted school bus, my brothers laughing at me as I wondered what we would do in church that day. I'm sure it will be heaven sent, whatever it is, Vince laughed. Can I get a hallelujah? You sure can, Fred chimed in. Hallelujah. I was totally oblivious to what they were talking about. I just sat there and smiled, I guess because they were laughing so hard. Praise the Lord, Ben added. Rise up, you sinners, Vince said in one of those boisterous sermon-like voices as Fred followed along line for line and stood up with his hands reaching towards the sky. No, wait, get down, Vince continued. Down on your knees and praise the glory of God. Fred hurriedly dropped to his knees in the aisle of the bus. Praise ye, Lord, he said as the laughter ensued. Vince laughed as Fred provided the visual for the words that seemed to flow from Vince's lips. You must ask for forgiveness for your sins, my son, Vince said as he placed his hand upon Fred's forehead, raising his voice so loud I was afraid the driver would tell us to keep it down. You must ask for forgiveness for your sins. You must purge your vessel of its sins so that someday it may dock itself on the shores of heaven. Fred answered as if they had practiced this routine a number of times. Lord, oh Lord, free me. Unsheathe me like the mighty sword of purity. Help me fight off the demons that have so plagued me. Oh Lord, unleash me. Lord, forgive me, for I have sinned. Just then, Vince gave a well-placed shove with the hand that he had on Fred's forehead with this whole time, causing Fred to fall back against a row of seats in the bus and then onto the floor. Hell no, you bastard. You'll be forgiven for nothing. They both laughed as Fred picked himself up off the floor and sat back down in one of the seats. Scott, we haven't gone to church in months, Fred said. What do you mean? I asked. We keep getting lost between the bus and Sunday school class, Vince replied. But we're going to try real hard to find God today, Fred proclaimed. Where the paths diverged, cold frost of life went unheard. No tracking backwards.
Great read and write, Scott. Thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. And Zach, your thoughts?
I thought it was very silly and funny. I loved the playful style ribbing. such easy, almost like a blasphemy, but not really, kind of like a back and forth. It's rather like a parody of scripture. It's sort of like a rabid style of preaching, kind of like one of those comical, like turbo evangelical preachers. that you sometimes see, and it reminded me of that, and that always tickled my funny bone. So I mean, that I love that. I love that.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I have to agree. Definitely a great sense of humor in this. So wonderful comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I have to laugh because so many serious pieces I've heard come my way from Scott. And when he comes out with something funny, which I think I've seen two or three in the last maybe month or so, I find it to be even funnier. Because he drops that serious side of himself. And I found that this was pretty darn, you know, comical. And, you know, I loved his delivery of it as much as the write, because when he, thank God he did his own read of this, because I don't think any of us would have kind of hit, well, Rex might have hit the mark. Somehow he kind of tunes in real quick. But it was wonderful that he gave us this audio tonight. It was funny. And I loved how, you know, he fell back against the row of seats and then to the floor. Hell no, you bastard. You'll be forgiven for nothing. They both laughed as Fred picked himself up off the floor and sat back down in one of the seats. Scott, we haven't gone to church in months, Red said. What do you mean, I asked. We keep getting lost between the bus and Sunday school class. You know, I just thought it was, they went through this whole big thing, you know, and then it came down to that little bit of humor there, and I thought it was funny. So wonderful job, Scott, and thanks for sharing with us. I enjoyed the read and the write, so nice job. Thanks for sharing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Great comment. Yeah, I'm no expert on the form, but, you know, I thought this was a pretty well-written Haibun. Very cool seeing him tackle a form. And amazing imagery. There was a sense of humor to this in the over-the-top preacher style, but also in the way the brothers interacted with each other. Like, there's a very different way that brothers interact than sisters interact. Yep. And he brings that all out in, like, this lively conversation tone. But there's also an intensity and thought-provoking lines, really an excellent write on journeys of faith that diverge in different directions. But he does it in such a entertaining and vivid and humorous way. So great write and very well done.
Absolutely.
And back to you, Jean.
Okay, Pam, I'm going to put your piece up next. And let me just put it here. This is called Better Days Are Gone by Pam Ray. Look out, world, she's going to tell us some truths.
Yeah. Well, this was, just so people have a heads up, this was written to a pretty dark song. So that's why the poem itself, yeah, I gotta set up an excuse.
Oh.
The better days are gone. Bubbling to the surface in the darkness deep is the darkness deep within, full of spit, full of grit, and the stench of familiar sin. I'm creeping and crawling, gnawing on the bone, sharing the voices of maiden and crone. You belong in the mud where the pigs gulp the slop. A knife to the hilt buried between the ribs of a liar, fed to the wolves and burned in the fire. I remember better days gone like shadows in the night. They've grown their venom and taken flight. Soaring beyond clouds of betrayal, you tiptoe around the garden where we planted seeds of hope and love. Now there's nothing but crabgrass choking the ground. Once you claimed you loved me, now you make no sound. You're such a sensual body, even when you're just a memory. You were such a beautiful kisser, even when you stopped kissing me. Goodbye to your handsome face, goodbye to my dream. I'm digging through my mind to hear the fear within your screams. You should have known you went too far when you broke my heart. I'm painting grass roots with your blood, turning murder into art. Yeah. Perhaps someday I'll find someone who'll treat me better than you. But for now, I'll walk this lonely path where the sideshow turns the screw.
Yeah.
End poem. And
okay.
You know, this would be the point where Rex would ask you if you're afraid.
I know. My God, Jesse, I'm not this guy, so I don't have any fears in this one. No, this is great, Pam. Really great. But go ahead, Zach. I want to hear you comment first. Pam makes me nervous sometimes.
All right. I like the. It was an oppressive and muddy atmosphere. It reminded me of immediately just Come and See, using the personification of nature to describe the demise of this love. And such despair and with such self-destruction, it just is absolutely devastating.
Thank you very much.
PM, as always, you know, I mean, I kind of say the same thing every week, but, you know, sometimes you do make me nervous. I want to know where all these underlying thoughts are hanging out. I want to know where you pull this stuff from, because I'm never sure, you know, like, could be like a metaphorical thing and I could still be in trouble somewhere. But I think that, you know, you do such a great job when you write these scenarios and these stories and whatever. One of these nights I'm going to request that you bring back the decaf poem. Really, I am. I just think that there's so much happening here. I'm creeping and crawling, gnawing on the bone, sharing the voices of maiden and crone. We belong in the mud where the pigs gulp the slop. A knife to the hilt, buried between the ribs of a liar, and fed to the wolves and burned in the fire. I remember better days gone like shadows in the night. They've grown their venom and taken flight, soaring beyond clouds of betrayal. Oh, my God, like, you know, yeah, I wouldn't want to be this dude, that's for sure. But I think, I mean, think about it, Zach. Now you think about it.
I am thinking about it.
It's scary, ain't it? It's scary.
It's very scary.
Yeah, I look at it. Yeah, oh, my God. I want to know where all these thoughts are hiding in her. Because, man, she packs a wallop when she writes these things. Oh, my God. Yeah. But really, Pam, this is excellent. Like so many other pieces I've seen, right? Cracks me up because I go, wow, what's she been doing over there? Ooh, I'm glad she ain't mad at me today. I say these things in my head. Yeah, I'm glad I'm making her mad. But and if anybody gets you mad, Kim, you just let me know. I'll help you. Oh, my God. It might be easier on that.
Absolutely.
No, just a wonderful, wonderful piece and very well done. Now, what did you write this for? I shouldn't say what. Did you write this for a contest?
Yeah, I did. Well, kind of. It was one of the prompts that Rex had in his Peter Gabriel contest.
Gotcha.
So it's not actually in the contest, but I had written it for the show, and then it wasn't really needed for that show.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, a shout out and a thank you to Rex for providing the song for inspiration. And thank you for the comment.
Absolutely. You know, great job as always. I'm telling you, you make me laugh. When I say you make me nervous, it really, I go, wow. She can, God help anybody who really does piss you off because you can pack a punch. I don't want to be it. I mean that with love. I do. Okay, so now the next piece I'm going to put up. It's called Thistle Was Here by Olivier. And trust me, this will brighten the mood from Pam's right. Just saying. I love you, Pam. I do. We've been around a long time together, you and me. Okay. And here we go. Thistle Was Here by Olivier. And I have an audio for this. So here we go.
Deep in the wood, a wonderful house was happened upon by a curious mouse. Its walls made of flowers gave the mouse powers. He grew and he grew and he grew. He grew until he was big as you, and he thought, I shall call myself Thistle. He danced and he whistled and ate peanuts brittle, and he rocked and whittled till he tired a little. And so Thistle, happy and fed, before going off to bed. In that wonderful house with its walls made of flowers, as the powers it granted would fade, he carved on the chair, Thistle was here, and forever the memory was made.
So good. Absolutely.
Wonderful read and write, Oliver. Thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I have to say, I've heard a few of Olivier's wonderful poetry, and I think he has wonderful these would all make such a wonderful children's book. I love the images that he has. I love the audios. I really do. I think they all have this wonderful, gentle, warm way about them. I do, and I could eat these up, every one of them. I really enjoy them very much. I'm like that, you know. I just have to, like, I don't know. I'm just a kid at heart. And, yeah, and it's different than Dr. Seuss, and I think it's better. Just saying. It's a whole different element to it, and I really enjoy it. So thank you so much, Olivia, for sharing with us. I absolutely love this piece, as I have all the other ones that I've read. It was great. So thank you so much for sharing. And great
absolutely.
Job.
Wonderful commenting. And Zach, your thoughts?
I love the nursery rhyme, like, fable type aspect of it, that sort of writing. And I loved, especially, it reminded me of The Night Before Christmas, the same kind of impact, the delightful impact that I felt from that piece I felt in this one. And I like the image of the super-sized mouse kind of just swelling up in the middle there. That was pretty comical, like James and the Giant Peach. And just kind of comes and goes, and you know, there's the memory, and it's kind of done, and it's well lived. I like this.
Absolutely.
I like
great.
That. I like that. Very cool. Yeah, I like that you brought up James and the Giant Peach. That was one of my favorite books as a kid. That and the Trumpet of the Swan. You know, the other. There are just some really great children's books out there. But wonderful comment. Yeah, this is absolutely, it's a delight to read. It's a delight to listen to. It's really one of those poems that is so very wonderful for all ages. Amazing storytelling, a great rhyme and flow. And I like that this can stand on its own, but it can also stand as an introduction to the character, and can be, you know, broadened. The story can be broadened even more with more right. And I particularly like he danced and he whistled and ate peanut brittle and he rocked and he whittled till he tired a little. Wonderful lines and very well done. All right, Jean, what do we got next?
Well, I have 7 minutes, so I'm going to read my piece to close. I'm sorry. That's if my voice holds up. Oh, I might have a chance. Wow. I can't wait to get rid of this thing, whatever it is.
Oh, I know.
It's crazy. I've been up, I've been down, I've been round and around. It's insane. Anyway, this piece that I'm going to put up is called Hey Mousy Mousy by me. Fill my eyes. And it's just a cute little thing. I think this is Pam's fault, if I remember correctly. If not, well, I'm a little crazy. So, Hey Mousy Mousy, what did you see? A group of old barn owls up in a tree? An old shoe and old boot as a perch for a wren. Tell me, dear Massey, where have you been? In wheat fields of gold up on flower tops high, looking for shelter just before night, watching the hummingbirds hit Master Jay. Tell me, dear Mousie, how'd you spend your day? Hey, Mousie, Mousie, what did you hear? Trilling of songbirds whose tunes so do endear. The flutter of wings, a flight in the air, circling and settling without any cares. Tell me, dear Mousie, what have you heard? The rustle of leaves that neighbors have stirred. Dandelion wishes and daffodil dreams coming together under evening's moonbeams. End poem. Oh, Pam's work.
Great, great read and write there, Gene. And Zach, your thoughts?
I loved how it had a similar feel to the last piece, but it complemented it in a way that was more based in nature than the other one.
Yeah.
And it had a delightful sort of like floral wildflower feel in the center. And it just kind of reminded me a little bit of my grandmother's place in Florida a bit. And it just took me back there, and very sunshiny until the sun sets, and then you're just kind of like left with the moon and optimism with the dreams. I loved it.
Thank you.
I liked it. Very cool. Yeah, and there is an optimism and a sunshininess to this. This was such a fun show to do, this photographer with the cute animals like the mice. And I was really glad that you were inspired. I put this on my poems I think are awesome list. Great rhyme and flow, wonderful imagery. And there is there's this so very delightful. And you do bring us into nature, but you bring us into nature in a great storytelling way. Like you see, make us by asking questions of the mouse. You help us to see what the mouse sees, and you know it's a small thing, but saying "Hey, mousey, mousey," was such a nice touch. Like it really worked with to provide the kind of innocence in the poem, but it also worked with the meter of the rhyme. And I really like this all the way through, but especially, hey, mousey, mousey, what did you hear? Trilling of songbirds whose tunes do endear. The flutter of wings, a flight in the air, circling and settling without any cares. Tell me, dear mousey, what have you heard? The rustle of leaves that neighbors have stirred. Amazing lines all the way through, and very well done, Gene.
Thank you. You know, Zach, I have to tell you, this contest that Pam had run, she had so many wonderful images of these little mice in all these different places, and there were birds and everything else. And most all the imagery in this poem was actually, like, grasped from one of the pictures that she had to offer. And so it made it kind of fun, because if I had put up each picture, you'd be like, wow, yeah, that, oh, yeah, that. Like,
right.
Kind of almost wrote itself, you know,
yeah.
Which I thought was so wonderful. And I was just drawn right in. I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, hey, Mousie. And I said, yeah, that'll work. And it was fun. So it was a lot of fun, Pam. I mean, that contest I really enjoyed. You know, and I guess, you know, I don't have the link because I didn't enter the contest. I just wrote for it. So it was fun. You know, it was really an enjoyable one. So, and I always... So, anyway, guys, look, we got 90 seconds left. Thank you, Zach,
hey.
For calling up and hanging out with us all night on the show. I hope to have you call back again soon. You know, we're here every Friday. And sometimes I'm here Tuesdays. Well, it depends on if I have a voice this Tuesday. Pam, thank you so much for co-hosting with me tonight. It's always a pleasure. And, Rex, I hope you're feeling better. And... yeah, I mean, it was a great night. And everybody, join us at 12:30 for Heart Center, Part Saint with Afasiana and Robbie. Is that right, Pam?
Yes. Robbie will be
okay.
Joining us tonight.
That's wonderful. And Zach, as I said, join us anytime. You're always welcome.
Thank you.
It was a good night, and it was a lot of fun. And, yeah, great poetry. Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful night and a great weekend. Night, all.